Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Leading Off, the daily podcast that lets you catch up on all things baseball you might have missed from the previous day, or in this case, the weekend. I'm your host, Dan Harris. You can find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. With me, as always, is my producer and Tiddlywinks champion, Brendan Tuma. You can find him on Twitter at TooMuchTuma. As always, we have so much to catch you up on from this weekend and not much time to do it, so let us start, as we always do, with my three biggest takeaways, which are Caleb Smith working his way into must-own territory, some big shakeup with the Braves pitching, and two Rays hitters who are working their way being to must-start players. After that, we're going to play a game of Can You Drop Him?, catch you up on some of the injury news, touch on some pitchers who bounced back this week, and discuss any developments in the closer landscape before I will tell you what I'll be watching in today's action. But we will begin with Caleb Smith, because it is not often that I get to lead with a Marlin, so I am going to take the opportunity. Smith has now faced the Mets, the Braves in SunTrust Park, mind you, and the Phillies. After Saturday's gem against Philadelphia, during which he struck out 6 over 6 scoreless innings, he now has a 2.65 ERA, a 0.88 whip, a 21-6 strikeout-to-walk ratio over 17 innings. He's got a 32% strikeout rate, good for 15th in Major League Baseball. As is the theme this year, Smith is a product of a pitcher relying more heavily on his best pitches. He has one of the best changeups in the game, and his slider isn't bad either. Now, last year, he threw his changeup roughly 14% of the time, but so far in 2019, he's throwing it 22% of the time. He's also throwing his slider a bit more as well, roughly 2 percentage points more. Batters are batting .067 against his changeup and .143 against the slider. Smith is just 13% owned, guys, and I take that as a personal affront. His stuff is legitimate. This is not a fluke. The biggest thing for him will likely be the lack of wins pitching for the Marlins, but he will take on the Nationals in his next start, where you should go ahead and deploy him at will. Arodys Vizcaíno was placed on the 10-day injured list on Sunday with right shoulder inflammation. Vizcaíno had not pitched since last Sunday, but there was no specific indication of a problem. Of course, Vizcaíno's shoulder bothered him last year and in spring training, so this was largely a committee anyway, as the Braves looked to protect Vizcaíno from himself. You might say that AJ's situation got a little bit minter? I'm sorry, that was awful. There is a lot of pressure when you are flying solo, guys. Look, Brian Snitker has already said that Minter will be used as the primary closer for the time being, and he is just 34% owned. I will give you until Wednesday to get that number to 85%, failing which I will only do these podcasts in a British accent going forward. And you think I am joking, but I read every bedtime story to my children in a British accent, and I will not hesitate to pull the trigger. Now, it wasn't an injury, but Sean Newcomb has mercifully been taken off the Braves roster after Saturday's clunker against the Mets. Newcomb was optioned to AAA after allowing 4 runs in 1 1/3 innings, and that was after being staked to a big lead. Newcomb had allowed just 2 runs in 11 innings in his first 2 starts, but has struck out just 5 batters and walked 6 over that span. What likely hastened Newcomb's demotion was the relief performance of Touki Toussaint, who pitched 6 scoreless innings while striking out 7. So let's talk about young Mr. Toussaint. A former first-round pick of the Diamondbacks, Toussaint oozes upside. He excelled last year across 2 levels, recording a 2.38 ERA and a 1.13 whip, with a 163-53 strikeout-to-walk ratio. He has got a plus curveball and his plus splitter, and can, without question, succeed in the majors. His issue, as it has always been throughout his career, is whether he can control the walks. Now, he did a fairly good job with that last season, and of course, when he relieved Newcomb, and he'll look to continue that and improve on last season's numbers. Now, the biggest issue is whether there is actually a spot in the rotation for Toussaint. Brian Snitker came out yesterday and said that Toussaint is in the rotation, quote, for now. And remember, the Braves have a lot of potential arms. In addition to Julio Teheran, Kevin Gausman, Max Fried, and Mike Foltynewicz, who is on his way back, there's still Newcomb himself, who was a big part of the rotation last year and could work his way back. Mike Soroka is on his way to getting healthy. Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson are waiting in AAA. In other words, it is worth remembering that if he struggles, Toussaint could lose his spot quickly. Still, he is a must-add at this point in any league, 12 teams or deeper, in my humble opinion. And how about those Rays? With their win yesterday over the Blue Jays, they moved to 12-4. And a big reason why is the production of Austin Meadows and Brandon Lau. On April 7th, Meadows was slashing .235, .297, .441. And even after yesterday's game where he went 0-4, he is now slashing .357, .438, .732. If you throw Meadows a fastball or a curveball right now, you are asking for trouble. He's batting .322 with a .610 slugging percentage against fastballs, and .333 with a .727 slugging percentage against curveballs. and he is just consistently hitting the ball well. He is barreling the ball 17.9% of the time, good for 27th in the majors. He's upped his launch angle from 13.7 degrees in 2018 to 17.5 degrees this season. These are just signs that his hot start is not fluky, okay? He has earned every bit of it. And remember, although you've heard about Meadows for a while now because he was a first-round pick in 2013, he's still just 23 years old. He has battled injuries for most of his career, but he looks healthy and most importantly relaxed, as evidenced by his 13% walk rate. That suggests that he's really not trying to do more than what is given to him by the pitchers. With 6 home runs, 16 RBI, and 2 steals already, Meadows is not only must-own, but he is must-start at the moment. And you might say the same for his teammate Brandon Lau, not to be confused with his minor league teammate Nate Lowe, spelled the same. On April 5th, Lau was slashing 200, 259, 360. After yesterday's game, he is at 302, 356, 585. Lau wasn't guaranteed a roster spot until late in spring training when the Rays signed him to a 6-year deal. He had an excellent 2018 over 2 minor league levels, batting 297 with 22 home runs in relatively limited time. Now, Lowe is striking out too much, about 31% of the time, and he does not hit the ball exceedingly hard or generally have a great batted ball profile. But frankly, this is a guy who is 17% owned and has 25 homer potential from second base. Don't expect a superstar with Lau, but add him in pretty much all formats. Okay, it's now time for a new game I like to call Can You Drop Them? This is where we're going to take some players who are off to questionable starts and discuss whether it's okay to drop them, just in case that title was not self-explanatory. All right, so let us start with Jay Happ. Can you drop him? You can, actually. It's funny to me that Happ has been solid for several years, but nobody cared about owning him, and now suddenly it's, oh my god, I was expecting Jay Happ to be a reliable part of the back end of my rotation. Look, after Friday's outing against the White Sox where he gave up 6 runs in 4 innings, he now has an 8.76 ERA and a 1.95 whip, and pitches in one of the most hitter-friendly environments in all of baseball. Yes, he has been generally undervalued throughout his career, and he did up his strikeout rate last year by throwing more elevated fastballs. And I am not telling you to spite drop Jay Happ, okay? Especially with the Angels, Royals, and Giants projected to be his next 3 matchups. But if you're in a roster crunch and you are considering whether to move on, I hereby give you permission. How about Rafael Devers? Can you drop him? I personally would not, no. Now, if you did, I do not think it would be the most egregious decision in the history of the world, but I would not be doing it if at all possible. After yesterday's 0-for-3, Devers is batting .246 with a .298 slugging percentage, but there are plenty of positives here. He's walked 7 times already this season and has an 11% walk rate after just a 7.8% mark last year. Conversely, his strikeout rate has dipped to about 17%, down from nearly 25% last year. Really, he's just hitting way too many ground balls right now. His ground ball rate is currently 58%, and that is just an unsustainably high number. Now, I can't guarantee that a rebound is coming, but given his pedigree and some positive signs underneath the surface, I would try to hold. Now, how about Carlos Carrasco and Corey Kluber? Yep, you can drop either or both at this point and feel fine about it. Relax, I am just trying to see if you are paying attention. You obviously cannot consider dropping either guy. Carrasco allowed 6 runs in just 2/3 of an inning on Friday against the Royals of all teams, and he has now allowed 6 runs in 2 of his 3 starts this season. I am wholly unconcerned. It was extremely cold in Kansas City on Friday, and Carrasco looked completely out of sorts from the start. Yes, it is a bad start to his season, but unless we hear the whispers of an injury, which we have not, I am entirely unconcerned. I would still start him without hesitation against the Mariners in his next time out. Now, I am slightly more concerned about Corey Kluber, however. Kluber allowed 6 runs over 2 2/3 innings on Sunday against the Royals, giving up 6 hits and a career-high 5 walks. Kluber's just been a little bit all over the place this year. In addition to walking 5 yesterday, he walked 3 in just 3 1/3 innings against the White Sox in his second start. Kluber did not walk 3 batters in any of his starts last season. And his velocity, which declined significantly last season, has continued its downward trend. He is averaging just 91 miles per hour so far this April, and he was frequently in the high 80s yesterday. If you own Kluber, there is really not much you can do right now. You obviously cannot drop him, and you can't sell him low. He has a tough matchup against the Braves next time out, but personally, I am still starting him wherever I own him. And what about Danny Jansen? Can you drop him? Well, I have a rule in fantasy baseball, okay, guys? It is not a hard and fast rule, but it is one that I try to go by as much as I can. It's do not draft a player who you could not pick out of a lineup. But I broke that rule in one league where I drafted Danny Jansen this year. It was purely based on the numbers and metrics, which are great, of course, but I could not remember watching a single Danny Jansen plate appearance in my life. Yet he was the consensus eighth catcher off the board, given his minor league tracker. And he's not only been bad this season, and it's a 390 OPS bad, but he's not even playing every day at this point. I'd personally be fine to roll the dice with Omar Narvaez, Austin Barnes, Jorge Alfaro, or even Robinson Chirinos at this point, if need be. Now perhaps this is unfair. Perhaps it is my lack of personal quote-unquote scouting of Jansen that has me so easy to drop a guy who was drafted as a starter in every league. But it is my show, and I can do what I want. So go ahead and cut him if you'd like. And how about our old friend Rick Porcello? Can you drop him? I will give you the answer that my wife gave me when I proposed to her. Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes. Actually, my wife's response to my proposal was, and this is true, quote, "What are you doing?" That is not a joke. "What are you doing?" is the response I got to my proposal to my wife. Things got better from there, don't worry. But I do not expect that with Porcello, and seriously, you can drop him already. I get that he gives you innings and had a reasonable strikeout rate, but he's really got one quality fantasy season to his belt, and you can go ahead and move on. Now, there was plenty of injury news from this weekend, including Gary Sanchez, whose leg injury was supposedly so minor that he pinch hit on Wednesday, but he was then placed on the injured list on Friday with a left calf strain. Sanchez is eligible to come off the IL on April 21st, and he said he expects to miss the minimum time. But remember, Mike Clevinger also said that he expected to make his next start and is now out until July. Now, I do not expect that to happen with Sanchez, but just don't take this missing the minimum time business as a given. Rougned Odor was placed on the 10-day injured list with a sprained right knee. He will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Now, there is not a lot of information here, but it's a little worrisome how this unfolded. He was in the lineup on Friday and then scratched, and then he was placed on the injured list, and now he'll just going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks? Like, again, read the fine print. This is not expected back in 2 weeks. This is reevaluated in 2 weeks. Odor has batted just 167 with no homers and two RBIs this year. Your old friend Danny Santana was called up from AAA and will likely see the bulk of time at second base. Santana was batting 343 in AAA and does have some speed if you're in an AL-only league. Dellin Betances is expected to miss another 6 to 7 weeks after his MRI revealed a bone spur in his right shoulder. Betances received a cortisone shot and will not need surgery, but look elsewhere for middle relief help in the near future. Finally, there is Mike Trout, who you might not know is dealing with a groin injury. Trout missed the weekend series against the Cubs and was not even in Chicago. First off, no matter what happens with Trout, this was the correct call. In addition to being prudent to give any injured player a little extra time, it was cold in Chicago this weekend, and there was no reason to risk Trout. With the Angels playing in Arlington tonight, where it is expected to be in the 70s, it made all the sense in the world. That is, of course, if Trout can play. The Angels gave an update on Trout on Sunday, stating that he was seen by Dr. Steve Yoon, and then an ultrasound images showed further improvement in his right groin, and Trout himself reports the same. He will join the Angels in Texas and will, quote, "continue to be evaluated to determine his readiness to play," unquote. That is kind of helpful, I suppose. I mean, the bottom line is, if the Angels want to put Trout on the injured list, they will probably do it today. An injured list stint can only be backdated 3 days, so they likely won't keep you in limbo much longer. Have someone ready to go in Trout's place, but even if he misses Monday's game, if the Angels do not put him on the injured list, I would likely take my chances on him in a weekly league. Brian Goodwin will likely be the primary center fielder if Trout continues to miss time. Some other injury updates included both Alex Bregman and Travis Shaw returning from their hamstring and hand injuries respectively. If you had any concerns about either, you should not any longer. And Andrew Benintendi left Sunday's game after taking a foul ball off his foot. He initially stayed in the game before leaving, and it is unlikely that he will play in Monday's game against Baltimore, which I must remind you will start at 11:05 a.m. because it is Patriots Day, so get your lineup set. Okay, so we talked a lot about pitchers like Porcello and Happ and Carrasco and Kluber. So let's talk about a few guys who upped their stock after this weekend's outings. After two mediocre starts, David Price bounced back against the Orioles on Sunday with 7 scoreless innings. Yes, it was against the Orioles, but Price has just really had some homeritis this year. He has just a 0.95 whip and 20 strikeouts in 19 innings. He will get a good test with the Rays in his next start, but you should be confident in starting him now and for the remainder of the season, as you should with Germán Márquez, who nearly no-hit the Giants in a complete game shutout on Sunday. Márquez had been roughed up in his previous start at home against the Braves, but dominated on Sunday in about as soft a matchup as there can be. Truly, this probably does little to calm his owners, who are more worried about whether they can start him at home, And personally, I would continue to roll him out there everywhere, including in his next start at home against the Phillies. Zach Wheeler also made positive strides on Friday against the Braves, allowing 2 earned runs over 6 innings with 8 strikeouts. Wheeler's command still isn't where it needs to be, but it was encouraging to see him bounce back after his disastrous 7-walk outing against the Nationals. He will take on the Phillies in Philadelphia in his next start. Hardly an easy matchup, so you may want to wait until after that start to make your buy low offers, which I would. Eduardo Rodriguez also finally got on track a bit this weekend, and as you can see, Baltimore will do that to pretty much everyone except Rick Porcello. Rodriguez allowed just 2 earned runs over 6 2/3 innings with 8 strikeouts. Rodriguez's changeup was perfect on Friday, and it had been getting a bit beat up prior to that start, so it was really good to see him find his command. I still find it hard to trust Rodriguez, but if he can turn in a quality outing against the Rays in his next time out, I would be fine rolling with him going forward. Finally, let's close with a few closer notes. Although no one recorded a save in the Red Sox's 4-0 win over the Orioles, it would have been Matt Barnes and not Ryan Brazier who would have gotten the call. Brazier pitched the 8th inning while the score was 1-0, and Barnes, who pitched the 9th, only did not get a save because the Red Sox scored 3 in the bottom of the 8th thanks to a Xander Bogaerts home run. Both Brazier and Barnes are pitching well, and this looks to be a true committee. The Royals got a save chance this weekend, and it went to Willy Peralta on Saturday, who pitched a clean inning in the Royals' 3-0 win over the Indians. You should not own a Royals reliever, but if you lost a bet and are forced to, it probably should be Peralta. And Blake Parker had everything looking like he would again put a stranglehold on the Twins' closer job, but he loaded the bases with 1 out in the 9th with a 6-4 lead and was pulled in favor of Trevor Hildenberger. I still think Parker leads the way in Minnesota, but his share of the closing duties probably got a little smaller on Sunday. Some other things you might have missed this weekend. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. was optioned to AAA after batting just 175 so far this season. Eric Sogard will be recalled to take Gurriel's place on the roster, but he is not worth your attention. Ozzie Albies appears to be the full-time leadoff hitter for the Braves now, and not just against lefties. This should be a boon for Albies' run score total going forward and help him work off that minuscule contract. Francisco Lindor will begin a rehab assignment with AAA today. It is unclear how long it will last, but Terry Francona suggested that Lindor won't need many at-bats. Craig Kimbrell appears to have lowered his demands. He is now reportedly looking for roughly $15 million per season. At this point, it seems more likely that Kimbrell waits until after he is no longer attached to a compensatory draft pick. I am confident that he will pitch this year in a closing situation, so unless you are totally hard-pressed, try to hold him and not trade him for pennies on the dollars. Eloy Jimenez hit his first 2 major league home runs on Friday. There will be many more to come, and he's now batting .288 after his slow start. Other hitters who had 2 homer games include the aforementioned Austin Meadows and Brandon Lau, as well as Marcell Ozuna and Wilson Contreras. For Ozuna, it is good to see signs that he is getting over his shoulder problems from last year, and as for Contreras, he continues to elevate the ball well this season, which could point to his breakout after a 52% ground ball rate last season. The Indians called up Carlos Gonzalez, who batted 3rd on Sunday, and went 1-for-5 with a run scored. Gonzalez was doing well so far in AAA. In 6 games, he was slashing .348, .483, .522. Now, it's unclear how much Gonzalez can contribute away from Coors, but he's worth a look in AL only or really deep mix leagues. Finally, Chris Davis broke his streak of 54 hitless at-bats this weekend and actually went 3-for-5 with 4 RBI in the game on Saturday. That has absolutely no fantasy impact, but it just kind of felt wrong not to mention it. For today, I'm going to, of course, be watching Clayton Kershaw against the Reds. As I mentioned previously, I am usually cautious starting pitchers in their first game back from the injured list, but I will make an exception here in light of Cincinnati's offensive struggles. If Kershaw looks good, it is full go from here on out in my book. And that's going to do it for today's version of Leading Off. Make sure to subscribe to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast and check your feed every weekday morning. Again, you can always find me on Twitter at DanHarris80 or Brendan at TooMuchTuma if you want to talk about anything at all. Enjoy your Monday, everyone. I'll catch you tomorrow.